Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
This podcast is a conversation between an architect and an anthropologist, and I'd like to introduce the anthropologist, which is Thomas Yarrow, who's just written this wonderful book, Architects, Portraits of a Practice, which we're going to deconstruct a little. And so Thomas Yarrow is an anthropologist at Durham University, and I suppose to put his work in the broadest context, he works on or is very interested in knowledge as a social practice. In this book, it's a book about architects, and I'm an architect who still has one foot in practice, but also an academic. My name is Prue Childs. So welcome, Tom, and thank you very much for this book. So if we could start perhaps about you being an anthropologist and about how, as an anthropologist, you came to this project.
Thanks, Prue. So I guess there's lots of different ways that I could tell the story of the genesis of this book. One is a more academic level. As you say, I've always been interested in knowledge as a social practice and really what it means to claim to know things with authority and what that actually looks like in a very kind of everyday register, what kinds of dilemmas arise, what's the kind of the personal but also the intellectual kind of substance of that knowing. So that's as part of that, I've had various projects which have had touched on architecture, but never kind of as the main focus. And so in this project, which also partly and importantly had its genesis in a much longer and older friendship with Thomas Miller, who's the one of the practice partners of the architectural practice that the book focuses on. And Thomas really is my oldest friend. I've known him actually longer than even I can remember. Our parents were friends and we always met up. So I've seen his life before architecture was even part of it, and then how it got tangled up in architecture and how he made sense of himself through architecture, and not always in an easy way, sometimes slightly falling out or rejecting it, or there was a period where he practiced really he wanted to connect design and build. So he spent a long time as a sort of builder, basically. So I've sort of traced it and charted that. And I suppose this book was a culmination of that friendship in a lot of ways. But there was a shift in a sense, and to some extent, slightly awkwardly, although productively, that an interest in, you know, with him about the world and all these projects that we did. We went traveling together, we built things together, then became slightly asymmetrically kind of more academic interest of mine in his world. And so although I hope the book is a kind of it's not about that friendship in any sense, but it's certainly that friendship was an important kind of context. And I think without that, it would have been difficult to have sort of had the intimacy and the trust really to tell the story in the way that I told it.
Well, exactly, and that's what comes out of it for me in such a generous way, is that the book starts with the premise of you in a way being enchanted with the kind of architectural world, the architectural life, through your friends and your upbringing, and I I really, when I was reading it, felt that you were having to think about your ways of working, your ways of analyzing this practice, because of your deep knowledge of one of the participants in this study. And so maybe we could talk a bit now in a bit more detail about your approach to your sort of ethnography, because you say very clearly, and I don't want to say everything you're going to say by any means, but you say very clearly that the book is written on a number of levels, that you can read it in a number of different ways. And I got very involved in looking at great long footnotes that you write, where a whole other academic world of literature appears as well. So, but I think this is to me, in a way, the most interesting thing about the book is your processes of writing, your ethnographic processes of writing. So can you say a little bit about that and why you wrote the book like you wrote it, and a little bit maybe about the structure of the book?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe if I just step back even before that, yeah, then I could say a little bit about the method of how I kind of gained access to this world, because I think of ethnography both as what we do in order to try to understand people's lives as anthropologists, and then also, as you say, it's very much about a way of writing about that. So mostly what I did was, as an anthropologist who refers to ethnography as really being just deep hanging out. And so that's a lot of what I did, was just floating around the office, getting as involved as I could, really. So I did a lot of talking to people as they worked. Also a lot of even getting involved in the design processes, getting involved in the crits that they did, going to see clients, and really just following people around and talking to them about what they did, and sometimes trying to do that. As part of that, though, the writing really started before I left the field. And more than any other project I've done, this was a really collaborative project, which I think partly is because these architects were so reflective on their own practices and really interested in it and aware of it, and not always with the time to reflect in as much detail as perhaps they would like in such a busy environment. So I wrote pieces which were sort of reflecting on what I was seeing and hearing, and then reflected those back, and then that also folded into they did a number of interviews they recorded between themselves, but often in relation to things that I had observed. Awesome. So it became a really interesting kind of reflective and dialogic process, and then actually through the writing of the book itself, I think having architects or practicing architects as one of the audiences I hoped to write for was actually really germane to how I then wrote. So my experience was that initially that I started sharing some of the early drafts of the book. And I think although they were kind of kind and generous in what they said, a lot of it was a fairly conventional academic monograph, and a lot of the theory, which I suppose I'd hoped was kind of where the general and the big points came through, actually were what they seem to be really turned off by. So I then started thinking about, well, how would this look like as a kind of an experiment in ethnographic writing that took away, or as you say, a lot of it's in footnotes, those kinds of interventions in academic literatures, which if you're not already part of that conversation, then probably those are going to be the least interesting parts. So in the sense, it's a very conceptual, it's a conceptual book in the sense that it comes out of my own reading in and around anthropology, engagements with various literatures, really. But I wanted to sort of turn that around so that it was more using concepts to describe in as hopefully as rich a possible way, and really to bring out the kind of multi-strandedness of this practice. It's architecture is just about so many things, and to tell that story in the kind of a big human sense. It's not just about knowledge as a sort of domain, it's about how that tangles up people's lives in all these really intimate ways, which and as I've said already, was partly that came out of my friendship with Thomas as well. Have you seen that?
So I just want to say here that for me, of course, having one foot in both worlds, what's really interesting is someone taking in an interest in who and what and how an architect is in the world. And as an ethnographer, I think we are very interested in ethnography generally because it helps us as architects understand people and the people who might be our clients. So ethnography and anthropology is a way that a lot of architects and sort of academic architects write about architecture as well, but from an architect's point of view, not from an ethnographer's point of view. So in a way, to me, one of the most interesting things was you have this huge range of references from all kinds of architectural figures or figures that are very popular in architecture, from Richard Sennett to Tim Ingold to, you know, all of the bit, and then much more architectural ones, Jeremy Till. And yet it is for us sometimes those unknown anthropologists that obviously very well known to you that is of a huge fascination as well. So, and but the way it's referenced, it's very easy to get under the skin of it. So the layers, I feel, do sort of cross over.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I suppose I had two kind of main audiences in mind. Yeah. Well, three really, actually. One is particularly practicing architects, I hope, can kind of recognise and see the resonances. And I hope those resonances go in lots of different ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then also, in a way, I kind of conceived that hopefully somebody who's not an architect, you know, a kind of a long-suffering partner or somebody who might be thinking about getting into architecture and, well, what's it actually like?
That was
the kind of most fundamental question to me.
Or
clients, indeed, or other building professionals.
Yeah,
so to try and take a stranger into this kind of weird and wonderful world that is full of all these kind of things that people assume because they just do it, these things that go without saying because they come without saying very often, and to kind of get inside of that common sense, which, of course, isn't actually common once you start opening it up. It rests on all these assumptions. So to try to tell it in that way.
So... yeah, there are so many people I think that this book could reference, and maybe I've hijacked it from the more academic kind of side of things and in architecture, which is huge, the way we educate architects you touch on, and which can be quite painful and draconian. But actually, we've had a number of discussions about this, that actually it can be a really rather wonderful education, you know, liberating your making, your thinking, your learning, your problem solving. You know, it's a problem solving, but it does have its stresses, and it can be a long and stressful education. There's many different types of character teaching, but I think that comes over that I think a lot that we are a product of our educations as well, in a certain way. I don't know. Is there anything you want to
I mean, I suppose there is that kind of vocational ideal. Maybe it's a sort of Bauhaus related one, and the idea that the sort of person has to be deconstructed and reconstructed. And it's a very, it's a sort of a very fundamentally, it's a process of self-transformation. And I think in recent discourses, there's often a tendency either to romanticize that or to completely demonize it. And I think I wanted to sort of resist saying that necessarily it was about either of those, but to try and trace the different paths that specific people take and how they see their lives as having been changed, you know, through their engagements with architecture. But also the other side to that, I think, you know, peculiarly, certainly unlike more scientific kinds of knowledge, who you are outside of your architecture is actually very central to who you are as an architect.
Yeah.
And that's partly what's trained in, actually, isn't it? A kind of an ability to tell that story in a convincing way for clients, for other architects and so forth. So that these sorts of self-narration are actually key professional things that you do as architects. So I was interested in that.
Because also an architectural education is quite academic, quite, you know, you do history and theory and many others. And there's a lot of kind of theoretical emphasis put sometimes on projects and as well as practical. And so there is always this, you know, kind of maybe a dialectic, maybe just a much bigger problem of theory and practice together.
Yeah.
And the predominance of one or the other, and I think you deal with that in a very interesting way, and you use your very interesting words of kind of thoughtful practice. And I know that became for me a big theme in the book, of how you approach your ethnography, being a theorist and looking at practice. So could you sort of say a bit more about that?
I mean, I suppose I think that's very gratifying to hear that those resonances are there for you. And I think for me, not just in architecture, but in architecture, there's a tendency to align theory with thoughtfulness and practice with a kind of process of mere implementation. And you kind of get that within the structure of the education, that the professional stuff, the kind of part three stuff, is the kind of unsexy, unglamorous, it's just procedural. But I guess the way I would see it, so I hope more generally that the book is trying to recover a sense of actually the creativity of those professional practices, including actually quite routine meetings and dealing with clients. There's a theorist I like called Donald Shun, who talks about the art of the specific case and the way in which often in lots of different forms of professional practice, we overlook how much creativity is required to fit sort of abstract ideas into messy, complex, specific realities, and where you have all these kind of contradictions and choices that emerge in that sort of fraught, tense, difficult space. And so, yeah, I think wanting to celebrate that and to see it not as lesser to theory, but also not opposed to theory. So in some ways, I mean, I sort of imagined the book at one point anyway, I don't know if this really works, but as a kind of effort to trace what concepts do, you know, through those practices, actually within the practice that I was mostly focusing on. They have this bookshelf at the end of the, you know, which has a lot of the kind of canon of architecture. So I sort of think, well, how is that canon actually internalized, lived, put to work, and what has to happen? It's a profoundly creative, profoundly interpretive act. It's not just a process of implementation or procedural process.
So. Yeah.
I think that's what I wanted to highlight.
It's interesting you mentioned Donald Shone, actually. We haven't talked about this before, but I think he's sort of gone out of fashion a little bit with architects reflecting on their practice, because I'm glad you acknowledge that. I think the architectural education is necessary reflective practice, but perhaps Donald Shone, because of the period he was writing more, is less good on architects collaborating, that you just talked about, and that sort of collaborative way that architects work. It's more about the individual creative process and the way that architects always work in teams, and you mentioned this as well, that this you know, in the book, and work often in a participatory way when they can, when as well. But that's something I actually want to say about the book, is that coming from an anthropological background, reading a lot of the architectural canon of literature, I think makes us as architects look at that literature in a slightly different way. I really found that. I said, oh, really? Is that what I missed that completely from the architectural reference or whatever? You know, and so I think that's really great when non-architects are reading. You know, we read other people's literature as architects, I think, a lot, because in academia, because we need other people, because it's such a broad subject. But sometimes we feel that people don't read architecture literature.
I think that's one of the great things about, I mean, you know, interdisciplinarity can be a bit of a cliche, but actually is those kind of borrowings and misreadings often as well.
Absolutely.
Can be.
So actually, I'm just thinking about that. Where do you think that is this book, is this book Architects, Portraiture and Practice, is this an architectural canon now or in anthropology, or it's a truly interdisciplinary book?
I mean, that's a really good question. I suppose I always think that I'm writing from a place, but that I hopefully I'm not writing to that place. And I think of that in terms of actually the practice, which maybe I should say a little bit more about, is the specific nature of the practice I'm writing about, but also in terms of my disciplinary position. So I tried to read widely in architecture and architectural theory, but fundamentally I'm engaging with that as an anthropologist, but I hope that I'm not writing for other anthropologists. And I do see this as being an issue, particularly with the kinds of research audit that we have so much in, at least in the UK at the moment, that we tend to write for a disciplinary audience because that's who's assessing our work. And so we have to map out an intervention in terms of a disciplinary debate. And if you're not already part of that debate, not part of that canon, well, you might not care so much about it. So this is deeply informed by my engagement with other anthropologists, but I'm not primarily writing for other anthropologists. So I hope the resonances are kind of there for architects, and I hope resonances are actually just for people beyond that who might be interested in, well, what's creativity, or how do we live a good and true life in a world that makes it really difficult to do that because it's so contradictory.
So we haven't got onto that all the subjects you do cover, which are as broad as from creativity to the more contractual side of architectural practice. But just tell us a little bit more of what type of practice you think the practice that you're writing about.
Yeah, so Miller Howard Workshop are based outside of London, which is significant in a context where so much of architecture revolves around the London scene, I guess. And they do have a sense of themselves as peripheral, although I think that sense of peripherality is not itself not uncommon. In terms of for practices outside of London,
well, I think some in London would even say that.
There's a kind of feeling for everybody. They were around about, they had 10 staff when I was doing the research. They were a relatively young practice, so the two practice directors were in their late 30s at the time of the research. And they do a kind of mixture of mostly domestic new builds, also some sort of smaller public sector pieces of work. And their own trajectory is quite interesting. It came out of the two practice directors having spent quite a lot of time themselves trying to really connect architecture with building. And so they spent quite a lot of time in their 20s actually designing and building things. And then as the scale kind of got bigger, that it's lost. But I guess it carries on as a sort of interesting craft and interesting, well, how do you work with builders in a kind of collaborative way? And also in their kind of interest in the building practices and building as something that is, it's not just what you do once you've kind of got your design, but, you know, an interest in model making and the kind of material basis of ideas.
Which... and I just wanted to go back, because we were going to talk about this a bit at the beginning, just go back a bit, that of course there have been other ethnographic studies of architects, notably, you know, recently Albanianova's one, but a much more high profile, if you like, architectural practice, when I think where a lot of the issues were slightly different, and I think the approach was slightly different, wasn't it? How do you feel you fit in with these other ethnographic studies?
Well, I mean, first of all, I should say how kind of inspired and helpful I've found really all of the, there's not a lot of ethnographic writing about architectural practice itself, but there's a small and growing body of work that's really useful. And I think what all of that does is it really highlights what actually happens, not what architects say about what architecture is, but actually what they do, what happens in an office or on a site. I think mine is maybe a little bit different. It's in conversation with the kinds of science and technology studies approaches that Albana, Geneva, and others have drawn on. But I think it also tries to put that more in conversation with actually an earlier, more sociological body. So I found Dana Cuff's work actually really helpful, because I think she says a lot more about how architects kind of conceptualize that relationship between their work and their life, and the kind of vocational ideals that are behind that. So I've found her work really interesting to think with. I don't think much of the existing literature looks at, perhaps partly because it has tended to be enchanted by these bigger, more well-known practices, just the kind of very everyday processes, particularly the kind of non-design related practices. How do you manage a contract? The endless meetings that happen, meetings are kind of boring, but they're also, I find them really interesting spaces. And so sort of thinking about how much of architecture is also about these kinds of things. And I think trying to, perhaps a bit more than other studies, to dwell in those kind of quiet moments, those unglamorous moments, and to, poetry is probably too grand a word, but to sort of see that, actually what is important about that, and not overlook those kind of quiet.
So I suppose how I slightly would translate that, in which I think is, to me, what I was picking up from the way you do it, it was about the forming of relationships all the time. And actually, creative architecture, certainly for me, comes out of forming good relationships with other people, whether it's your clients, whether it's other communities, whether it's builders, hugely important, whether it's other consultants, the better relationship you have and better understanding you have. And I think that's in those moments. So, yeah, so the creative moments in meetings is what you say is as important as actually sitting in front of a screen or with a model or whatever in that early creative process. So you do talk about creativity quite a lot, and you bring some really interesting references into that about creativity. What are the other really big themes that you think came out of the book?
I mean, I suppose the, my overall interest, and I think that this relates to the stuff about creativity, and it relates also more to the practices that are about implementation. So you've got a design, but how do you create a building? As you say, that's partly about negotiations with builders and with clients and all those kind of many unpredictable things that can make it not happen or not happen in the way you want it. So I think a lot of it I see as being about how do you know in a world that almost infinitely exceeds your ability to grasp it. And and that's not a peculiar problem for architects, but I think it presents itself in a very pressing form, because you're in these interstitial spaces, unlike a lot of forms of professional practice, which actually circumscribe a domain quite narrowly. You've got so many elements, there's so many elements to a building, so many different kinds of experts you're dealing with. So it's a sort of this jack of all trades idea, or knowing a little about a lot. And I really want to sort of celebrate and highlight that active kind of not knowing, which is a kind of, I mean, not all architects are modest and humble, but I think there is, you know, potentially something in that that you kind of have to be aware of what you don't know. And that's not the same as just ignorance, actually. It's about a really active orientation to the unknown. And I think that's something I want to kind of take out of this, is that often what architects do is fabricate specific reconciliations to things that are intention, fundamentally intention. You're not going to resolve it forever and always, but you're going to bring about, hopefully, a good solution that's going to work for the people that you're working for. And that's not a small thing. Even if it's not perfect, it can be good. And that can have important consequences. And I think also to say that this practice are, a creative, a dynamic, a thoughtful practice, but in many ways the tensions that they're dealing with are kind of quite widespread ones. It's a conservative planning system. It's all the issues of architectural education, the way it is. It's the building, a neoliberal building industry, etc., etc. And I think how you kind of wrest a possible world out of that
navigate your way through
constraints
it.
And navigate through it.
So another subject that's that really comes to the fore, I think, in your book is architects' relationship with history and conservation, which, as you say, in this country is particularly conservative, or was. I think things are changing now. And I think you've written about that before as well, that you came to this book. But this practice that you were talking about is operating in an area of the country which has a lot of historic architecture and conservation. What are the kind of key things that came out of that for you in this book? Because I think there's a lot of lessons to be learnt in your writing here. And again, a lot of great references to look up.
Thanks for well, I'm interested in the way that the way in which the past is, I suppose, possibilized through architecture. So unlike some previous research I've been doing, I've been looking at more rarefied conservation contexts, where working with conservationists, and these architects are not conservationists, though they're often dealing with listed buildings or buildings in historically designated areas. I'm interested in how you project something from a past and how you how one sort of continues from that in a way that doesn't just make it kind of ossify, but which actually kind of so how is the, I mean, it's again, it's about this relationship between the actual and the possible, really, that I was talking about before. But mm-hmm. how does that kind of defer to an existing set of contexts and constraints and an existing, so if you're on a site, you know, which parts of, it's always a process of selection. You're never just interested in history. It's particular trajectories that get kind of teased out of that. And I think more generally, I'm interested in the tensions often between different notions of kind of authenticity. So the quite routine kind of, well, they're practicing mm-hmm. in the Cotswolds. So local planners want Cotswold stone. Mm. But of course, that rests on an idea or a time when there was a completely different construction industry, when we had stone was freely available. So what does it mean to practice authentically today mm-hmm. in that context, but in a completely different context where builders aren't really used to working in stone in the way that they were? There isn't much stone, it's expensive, etc., etc. So I think rightly they're very resistant to the kind of ersatz version of the Cotswolds. But then what does it mean to practice as a sort of, they use this term contemporary vernacular, which I guess it's another between space. It's another kind of, well, how do you bring these contradictory things together in a hopefully interesting way?
Okay, so, well, maybe is it time to sum up, do you think, or finish? Well, there's so many things we could talk about this book, so many issues, I think. But I think, in a way, perhaps we've covered most of them. Is there anything else, do you think, that...
No, I think that's a good place to leave it. I'd just like to say that I suppose for me this was a sort of act of faith writing this, in a sense, without much faith necessarily, that it was I wanted to write for architects, and I hoped that those resonances would be there. So I still, it's kind of early days in that sense, and I'm really interested in your reflections on kind of where and how and whether those resonances are there, because I didn't want to sort of, this absolutely isn't a book saying this is what should happen. And I suppose maybe that is one of the differences and the kind of freedom I have as an anthropologist, is I don't have a normative agenda. I'm not trying to say architecture should be this or should be that. I'm really just trying to witness what it is that I see.
And I think we can't, well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I recognise so much of, not necessarily myself, but often myself, but other colleagues, both in practice actually and in academia. I mean, I think this is a book as much for studying as it is for just reading and enjoying. And I really appreciate that. I think I said in a review that, I think this will be a book that's used. Lots of young architects are really interested in their dissertations to be writing about some issues that you've written about in here, sort of from an anthropologist's point of view. But I think in the world generally, I mean, in the sort of political situation we're in, the bigger agendas here for you discussing professionalism and what it is to know and what it is to be in the position. You know, architects' role has changed over the years, as we all know. You know, we're not necessarily the lead in the whole building process anymore. The way we haven't actually discussed the whole digital side of drawings on the computer versus drawing and modelling off the computer, which is discussed a lot in the book, which is really interesting. So I think you're right when you say this, but I think this book could be read by many different people, lay people just interested in architects, but also other professions and other, you know, we've looked before to other ethnographic studies of other professions, particularly the medical profession. There's quite a lot written about things like that. And so I think in many different ways, this book adds to trying to understand how architects operate, which we need to do to ensure, the profession, which, can feel quite beleaguered sometimes. Mm. You know, an awful lot of the built environment is built without architects. And architects, like all the other professions, are under criticism and under scrutiny a lot of the time, particularly, in the present, you mentioned it, sort of neoliberal environment we live in, how useful are we? And so I just want to say thank you very much for the huge amount of effort you've put into this book, which which I think has been and will be very well and is being very well received. And I thoroughly recommend anyone to read it to understand a bit more about who we are as architects.